I was talking with Tom and Mark. I've got an out-of-town training October the 14th.
Okay.
So next week we will finish up with Colossians, and there will be an in-class exam for those that are taking the class for credit.
Okay.
So at that time, be ready with your memory verses, and you can just write those out. There'll be space on the exam for that. And Mark will be proctoring the exam. So, any questions about that? Just a little change.
Are we having a class before?
No, those that are not taking the class for credit will be able to leave after Tom's class.
The memory verses are the ones from Ephesians, right?
No.
It would be a Colossians.
Colossians.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you have chosen to do Ephesians, that's fine. I mean, if you already have those in mind. Just as long as
you know. I said test one was Ephesians, and I thought, well, I didn't know if that changed on the syllabus.
No, no syllabus shows.
Yeah, it probably does, because I kind of switched it around.
It ain't no problem.
Yeah, whatever you're comfortable with on that, what you've memorized. Ultimately, it's just kind of toward the end to get them all done. Any other questions? Okay. We were looking last time at Colossians chapter 2, and we were kind of in the area of 13, 14, 15, in that area. And he's coming out of the section talking about forgiveness. And I think what's important here to remember, in this section he's primarily talking to Gentiles. Gentiles weren't under the law of Moses to begin with. So he's going to address that in a sense that they're going to understand that while the Judaizers were trying to bind things on them, that first of all, that wasn't authorized by God, as they weren't under the law of Moses to begin with. And they certainly didn't have a good grasp of the law of Moses themselves, because the Pharisees are kind of examples of that and how they perverted it. Okay. So he comes out of a section, beginning verse 11, talking about the spiritual birth, spiritual circumcision, that they were buried with Christ, it was a working of God, and you, Gentiles, being dead in your trespasses and uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him. There's that union with Christ, having forgiven you all trespasses. Okay. Then he says, having wiped out, annulled, the handwriting, we said that singular, in requirements that was against you, which was contrary to you. Okay. So I think he's doing a couple of things. Ultimately, what he's going to be doing is saying, and there's a parallel that we'll look at in Ephesians, that the law of Moses, as we use it, was, if you will, nailed to the cross as Jesus was nailed to the cross. There was a fulfillment. Okay. But he talks about, I think, coming out of this idea of you have been forgiven and he has wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us. Now, my question is, how was, if he's talking here at this point about the law of Moses, how was it contrary to the Gentiles? How was it against them?
It was not to them.
It was not to them. Okay. I think what he's doing here, not to make it confusing, but he's talking about forgiveness. Okay? Has he established that? Okay. But this wasn't their covenant. It didn't specify what they needed to do to be forgiven. So, since it did not address them in those spiritual matters, it was kind of contrary to them. It was out there, what do we do? We don't have that. It was against them in the sense of it didn't address their spiritual needs. They couldn't turn to, you know, any place in the Deuteronomy or any of those places and say, okay, this applies to them. This is what we need to do. We need to make these sacrifices. It didn't do that. Okay. So I think what he's doing is bringing this up and ultimately saying, no matter what the Jewish people were saying, this is taken out of the way. You have been forgiven. Some believe that the IOU here has to do with their sins, if you will. It was almost, okay, we sinned. And it was like, I owe you. I have sinned. I owe you. As though he's taking all of these IOUs and nailing them to the cross as well. Maybe it is a combination. I don't know. But this I do know. Turn to Ephesians just for a second and notice the parallel. But what I want us to keep in mind, again, the law of Moses wasn't for these Gentiles, okay? So we can't say, okay, this is taken out of the way, so you're okay now. That didn't apply to us to begin with. Okay. But in chapter 2 and verse 11 beginning, again, he kind of uses the same terminology. Therefore remember that you once Gentiles in the flesh are called uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision made in the flesh by hands, that at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. Not in the ultimate sense, because the Gentiles many times were used by God. And we have Melchizedek and others that kind of stood out as righteous people. But then he says in verse 13, but now in Christ Jesus, you who were afar off have been made nigh by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has broken, has made both one, has broken down the middle wall of division between us, having, here's what I want us to look at, having abolished in his flesh the enmity. Doesn't that seem to parallel over here with having wiped out the handwriting, the requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us? The law of commandments contained in ordinances. I think that's the parallel passage. The law, singular, of commandments, plural, contained in ordinances, plural, seems to be a parallel to having wiped out the handwriting, singular, of requirements, plural, that was against us, which was contrary to us, so as to create in himself one new man from the two, thus making peace, that he might reconcile them both to God in one body, through the cross, having put to death the enmity. Okay. So possibly what he's doing here is, he's saying, you Gentiles, this thing stood against you and all of these requirements within it. Okay. He's forgiven you, and possibly this, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit. There was a part of the law of Moses that everyone would have been amenable to. And I don't want you to misunderstand me, so I'm going to be careful with this, okay? And I'll tell you what I'm not saying as well as what I'm saying. From the very beginning, were there not moral laws?
Yes.
Yes. It's always been wrong to kill. Even when Abel killed, or Cain killed Abel, it was wrong. I don't find that thus saith the Lord in that matter, but it was certainly wrong. As well as other sins, moral. Okay. So the moral laws, which were really an expression of the very nature of God, and he created us in his own nature. So there were those moral laws that everyone was amenable. Now, here's what I'm not saying. I'm not saying, as some say, well, the Ten Commandments were the moral laws, and then we have the law of Moses, and what he did was he took the law of Moses out of the way, but everybody is amenable now to the Ten Commandments. I'm not saying that, okay? Because looking at the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, there's one there that's not really a moral law, and that's to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. But within the law of Moses, this is what I believe takes place, within the law of Moses, it encompasses these moral laws that have always been there. Because for God to take those out of the way, God would be contrary to his very nature. So they were still there. Okay. Well, here we have the Gentile world that's not a part of the law of Moses, but they're still amenable to these moral laws, right? We get down here to the law of Christ. Are those moral laws still there?
Yes,
they are. Sometimes we run back here and we look at the Ten Commandments and say nine of them have been reinstated. Well, somewhat true, but they've always been there. This was just an expression of them in another way. But they've always been. It's always been wrong to steal and kill and commit adultery and fornication, all those things that were moral laws. So, possibly within that, he's saying, yeah, the law of Moses did deal with those moral matters, and you violated them, therefore you sinned. But you've been forgiven, and he took this out of the way. And in that, nailing it to the cross was an expression of forgiveness. At that same time, you were forgiven of those sins through the blood of Christ. Does that make sense? Okay. But ultimately, it comes down to the law of Moses being nailed to the cross. But I think there's a little bit more to it, and I just wanted to share with you a little bit more to it, okay?
Something weird about what I've got to discuss in Romans along the same lines, but in addition to moral laws, though, like with Cain and Abel, obviously there's some sort of instruction from God with their sacrifices. So,
yeah.
And in my mind, it seems that those continued for the patriarchal age. So there was something there that they were supposed to do in addition to just a moral issue of things.
I think so, and I think he was communicating to people that we don't have it recorded,
exactly.
Like Melchizedek and others, because they had that information, and see, the only way that we can be responsible for it is if God reveals it. If it's not revealed in any form, I'm not. Now, and what I mean by that is like what you're saying, from the beginning, they had to know the right from wrong, therefore there we have God communicating to them to know that it's wrong.
That's when you used this IOU last week, and what he was going to say, it kind of made me think about it. It's kind of like the law of Moses was the Jewish portion was nailed to the cross, and IOU almost was like the patriarchal portion that their sins have not been forgiven as Jews have not been because Christ has not died. They both ended at that point, so whatever they were doing, mm-hmm. there's something happened here. So,
yeah.
Like you said, we don't know those pieces. But,
yeah, that's a good way to put it, because that may be that component that would be applicable to the Gentiles. Because I know the law of Moses in and of itself wasn't. And they could say, I don't know what the big deal is, because I never was amenable to it to begin with. But it may be the Gentile, the moral aspect of it that they were. Yes.
So when he uses the word us in here, he's referring to Jews and Gentiles, not just... Because sometimes in Ephesians, you know, the parallel, he uses you for Gentiles and us in the sense of Jews.
Right.
So you think that in the us, is he referring to more than just the Jews?
Yeah, I think that is
Jews and Gentiles?
Transition, yeah. So he starts out with verse 13, and you, I think that's the Gentile part of it, you being dead in all of this, he's forgiven. having wiped out, again, these Hamites, that was against us. Now, it may be what he's saying here, that was against us, which was contrary to us. First of all, we understand it from the Gentiles' perspective. From the Jewish perspective, it wasn't a complete system. It wasn't all that God had to say on the matter. Now, here's something to remember. The Pharisees thought it was a closed system. They thought everything that they needed was contained right in this. But it wasn't. Because if this were a closed system, then they couldn't have been forgiven. It would be against them. It was contrary to them. They couldn't live up to it completely, fully, perfectly. I don't think God ever expected them to in the ultimate sense, because they were human beings. But being a closed system, it really didn't matter, because it had to extend to the Christian age. And the cross kind of joining them together.
I guess I'm just, it's a different thinking than I may have taken on this verse before. It seems like, for instance, Peter, not just by opinion, but by inspiration in Acts 15, calls the law a yoke that they could not bear. So it wasn't a Pharisaical mistaken interpretation or application of the law. In that sense, Peter was, by inspiration, standing up there in Jerusalem and declaring, that we nor our fathers can bear this.
Right.
And the requirements there, the fact that not just the way that they took it, but the fact that there were so many and so detailed, and it was a yoke that they couldn't bear.
Yeah. Right. To bear in and of themselves. I still wonder in that point if he isn't looking at it from a Pharisaic perspective. Because what he's dealing with there is they're trying to bind circumcision and other things, okay, as requirement for salvation. Well, even under the old law, in of itself, that wouldn't merit salvation. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it still kind of leaves the door open to what he may even be saying there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions on this? Okay. Moving along. He says in verse 15, having disarmed principalities and powers in this nailing of the law to the cross. He made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it. Now, he may be talking here about the Jewish hierarchy. Okay. In other words, again, at least the way that I look at it, as with the Pharisees and others, they were legalistic in mind, thinking, okay, and with the traditions of the fathers and all that going on. Well, what Jesus did was he fulfilled it. It came to an end, which was, for those who live by faith, just kind of a slap in the Jewish hierarchy's face of, wait a minute, it's over with. You can't bind that on us anymore. In verse 16, having done that, disarmed them, therefore let no one judge you in food or in drink or in regarding to festival or new moon or Sabbath. These were things that were being bound on these Christians at that time. At least the talk was. These things are important to us, what we need to do. But first of all, they were never to be a part of the Gentiles' way of life, to be in a right relationship with God. But it's interesting, I think what we have here is just a little bit more than just a Jewish component, but again, it's that mixture of mysticism and Hellenism and everything, okay? Because if you think back to the law of Moses, did it really deal with their drink requirement? Not really so much. It was always their food. But if you look at the other religions, drink was important. So we may be looking at more than just the Jewish element, but that is an important part of it. Okay. Which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance, the body, is Christ. It's like looking again at a shadow and something has cast the shadow, the way the sun's looking at it. Okay. So ultimately what he's saying here, and I believe he's dealing more with legalism than just the law of Moses, okay, but a legalistic view of the law of Moses, basically said, wait a minute, they're telling you, you're amenable to this, you need to be careful with all of these food and drink and festival and new moon and Sabbath requirements, but I want you to know that you don't. It's nailed to the cross, and the substance, what this was really looking to, was Christ. He's already come. And I've already told you, you've been baptized into Him. You've been forgiven. So He's the answer to the sin problem. Any questions? Then He goes in, and He's going to talk to them about mysticism and their requirements, and what they're saying. He says, let no one defraud you of your reward. What would be their reward? Pardon?
Eternal life.
Eternal life. Right. Number one, taking delight in false humility. False has really been supplied for us, so it's kind of taking delight in humility. You ever seen religious groups that really display themselves as being very humble, folding their hands, walking around, kind of call them monks, right? And worship of angels. Now, where would those within mysticism get this idea of angels? Out of the Jewish belief. There we have it documented that there were angels in the Old Testament that appeared to people, okay? That's why I'm saying I think it's more of a blend here, of all this blended together. And I'll show you what I have in mind in just a moment. So the worship of angels. Okay. We don't really find the Jewish people worshiping angels. But in mysticism, like even today, they're worshiping about anything, right? And including angels today. I mean, you have angels with the little wings, and we've got them on, you know, lapel pins and whatever. Okay, not that these folks are worshiping it, but it's coming out of that cultural belief of even today. So he said, you know, don't let anybody defraud you of that, and intruding into those things which he has not seen, not is supplied for us. And I think the translators are trying to help us to understand, but they really didn't see them, okay? They were just saying they did. Well, I figured that out myself. Because what he's saying, they're intruding into those things which he has seen, which he's really saying he's seen. Okay? And that may be into the spiritual realm or whatever. That would have to do with a lot of their insight. You know, we see things that you can't see. But notice where he starts out with their humility. But now notice, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind. That's why the translators probably put in their false. Because while they're saying, oh, we're very humble, but we've seen all these things. We're really important. You need to come to us. And we'll tell you the insights into spirituality. and not holding fast to the head, which is Jesus. I mean, that's the answer. Notice how he keeps coming back to the answer to all of this. From whom all the body, that would include Jews and Gentiles alike, all people, nourished, that means keep on being nourished, and knit together, and it keeps on being knitted together by joints and ligaments, grows with the increase which is from God. Okay? That's where spiritual growth comes from. That is where spiritual maturity comes from. It isn't, oh, I've seen an angel, I've worshipped an angel, I've seen things that nobody else can see. No. It's really found in holding fast to Jesus, something that has some substance, that which is logical and reasonable. This other stuff's not logical or reasonable. This is something that's real, that we can read about, and we call it faith. Right? Substance of things hoped for. Evidence of things not seen. Does that make sense? Any questions on that little segment? So he's really in that attacking the mysticism. Then he's going to get into ceremonialism and asceticism, beating themselves up. Now let me share with you what I think he's doing here. And I think he's very logical and reasonable in what he's doing. He first begins talking about philosophy, right? Okay. He talks about philosophy in this first segment, okay? And how people relied on human wisdom. Okay. And in that, they began to create these doctrines of men came out of that, okay? So he talks about that. But he says in that part, this beginning in verse 8, in verse 10, you are complete in Jesus, okay? So Jesus, again, is the answer to even that. Then he steps into the Jewish aspect of it, okay? Because it's almost this philosophy, the thinking of men, relying on their wisdom, also influenced the Jews. And that's where they began to bind on people. Especially at this time, and how all that meshed together. But again, Jesus was the answer to that. He's the substance. He's the body of the shadow. But now, what we've looked at here, even went into mysticism, okay, and out of the Jewish belief and how all this was meshed together, we have the worship of angels. And out of this, they would often talk about the heavenly bodies and God out there, and there was a spiritual aspect to it that they embraced, and it's meshed. Well, out of that, he is now going to get, and that's where we are now, into ceremonialism and asceticism. In other words, went all the way back here to this philosophy of men, a blending of Judaism and mysticism. It leads somewhere. Not the right way, but it leads somewhere. So he talks about, well, first of all, there is this ceremonialism. Therefore, in verse 20, if you died with Christ, and he's already addressed that earlier, right? In verse 12. That is to be buried with Christ from the basic principles of the world. And remember, he talked about the basic principles of the world earlier. Why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourselves to regulations? And if you notice in verse 8, beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the traditions of men, according to the basic principles of the world and not to Christ. I think he's just continuing with that theme now as he's summing it up. Do not touch, do not taste, do not handle. Why do you let people tell you those things? Why do you allow them to bind that on you? Don't we even struggle with that today? Sometimes?
Yeah,
we did, still do it. And just my personal opinion, I mean, like, you have a kitchen next door and a multi-burner, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's good. I think that's a part of, you know, the Christian life. But there are folks that say you can't have that, trying to bind that and so many other things on us. Paul, don't let that happen. Okay. Which all concern, number one, things which perish with the using. We're not talking about eternal things, lasting things, according to the commandments and doctrines of men, which he's already addressed as we looked at in verse 8. These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom. Notice in verse 8, the idea of wisdom in self-imposed religion or self-will worship, false humility, the neglect of the body, but of no value against the indulgence of the flesh. They're saying this is how you really get through this sin thing. You know, you take away this and take away that, and then you'll be perfect and sinless. Nah, it won't happen. That's why you can pass rules and regulations and have laws that basically define how people are to live. And for a little while, that'll work. But normally what happens? They're right back where they were because you have to change this here to change the behaviors of people that will last. Okay. So they're trying to say, you don't eat this and don't touch that and all of that, and that's going to make you sinless? No, it's not going to happen. The answer is, as he's already said, it is to increase in our knowledge and our faith in God. That's how it will happen. Any questions on what we've looked at there?
So he took them here, and it's really, he brought them right back to where they started, this whole idea.
There's really a lot going on there. You know, I think that's probably why, you know, before I thought of certain verses and just maybe got an elementary point out of it. But if you put all that in there, there's really a lot going on that he's fighting against.
It is. And an interesting thing is, I wish he had taken his time. Okay, give me, you know, I can read and I can take my time. Give me some more pages, you know. Lengthen this out so I have more to deal with. Because he just hits it, and he hits it, and he moves on. It's summed up. And he's probably going to rely on, you know, Tychicus and others to spend some time with him to explain all that, which we're just left with the abbreviated form of it. So, yeah, there's a lot in here, and a lot more that we could look at if time allowed. So that's looking at the danger of all of this danger. Just think just for a moment. We'll move on. You've got problems in the church, right, at times. I mean, you look out and there's congregations even near where I am. You kind of wonder, what's going on here? Where did you ever get to that point? So much of it starts right there. The philosophies of men, which is, oh, I think it should be this way. It really sounds good to me, and go forward and just... But ultimately, we get down to the end of, yeah, we're still binding on people, changing God's word. So it's not just that we're fighting liberalism. I understand that element of it. I think we're still dealing with legalism, especially from this perspective. Now, having said that, chapter 3 goes into their Christian duty as they now live out the Christian life, okay? They live out what it is to be a Christian, a Christ-like person. Because remember, this book is looking at the preeminence of Jesus. if I believe he is preeminent, if I believe he is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, if I believe he is the head of the church, then it must, by virtue of who he is, change my life. And I have to reflect his nature in my life. So he starts out, if, and it's not so much doubting it, it could also be translated since. Since then, you were raised, it goes back to what we looked at earlier in verse 12 of chapter 2, raised with him in baptism. Since you were baptized with Christ, or into him, the idea is probably that union as he came out of the grave, you too came out of the grave, his was a physical resurrection, yours is a spiritual, but you have that union now. Since that's happened, number one is to seek those things which are above. The idea here to seek, it's a present active. You keep on seeking. Okay. You keep on seeking those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Now, what does it mean to seek those things which are above? Well, it's probably talking about where they were talking earlier about the principles of the world and these things that are down here, this physical world, even though they said, you know, this is all sinful and it's material, therefore it has to be bad. They're still focusing on all that stuff down here. So he says, wait a minute, let's be spiritually minded. Let's think on those things that come from God. Come from above, not from here on earth, from the minds of men. So seeing those things which are above, spiritual things, where Christ is at the right hand of God. Now, what does it mean to be at the right hand of God?
Position of honor, power.
Yeah, exactly. Position of authority, power, right? Preeminence. Okay. So he's just restating the same thing with a different language here, at the right hand of God. Okay. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. Now, this really helps us now to understand how we seek. He tells us to seek. Now he's going to tell us how to do it. Number one, set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. And that's how we do that. Again, being spiritually minded. For you died spiritually, that old man of sin, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Now, the word hidden is perfect tense in the Greek, which means it had a beginning and it continues. Okay. When was their life hidden?
When they were separated from sin.
Exactly. When they were raised, when they were baptized. Okay. So since that happened, from that time, you should have been seeking things that are above, where Christ is, not on things on the earth. Because don't forget, you die. That old man of sin, that one that was focusing on all of these things down here on earth, the pleasures of the flesh. You put that person to death. In verse 4, when Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Now the idea here is, when Christ, who is our life, that is the source and even pattern of our life, when he appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. That's interesting, this phrase, in glory. Now we think about Jesus coming in all his glory, right? And all the angels with him. But he says something here, that we are going to appear with him in glory as well. We somehow share in that glorious moment, and not only that moment, to share in his glory. I don't understand all of that. Maybe a part of just being in his presence, close to him. But somehow, we are going to be exalted as well with him. Not to the same status in any way. But I think he's talking about the closeness. And again, this would be wonderful news for those Gentiles. That they can say, I don't need you over here, Gnostics, if you will. I've got all I need. And someday I'm going to appear in that glory with him. Any questions? Okay. And then, verse 5. Therefore, this is aorist tense, put to death. Do it once and make it last. Now, it's not in the face of 1 John 1 verse 7, as we walk in the light as he is in light, he forgives us of our sins, which is the idea. There are times we come short of the glory of God, Romans 3:23, right? But the thought here is, put to death your members which are on earth that relate to fornication, all these things. These things that you really have to purpose to do, really? I mean, you just don't fall into fornication. Whoa, what did I just do? No, you pretty well planned it, right? Yeah. Some things that people do and the excuses they come up with is just mind-boggling.
Yeah. You mentioned that's aorist tense. So
yeah.
Usually when we talk about something that has effect in the future, it's in a different tense. You know? I mean, aorist is more like a snapshot of one point.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Yeah. And it may be what he's saying here is through all that's been going on, they're not really where they should be. So let's get right now. Let's start right here. Have a beginning point. Okay. So therefore, right now, put to death your members which are on the earth. They should have done it earlier, okay? Because he's already told them that when he talks about your life was hidden, that had a beginning. It should have been that way. But you haven't hidden that lie. So, do it once, and you shouldn't have to keep on doing it, especially in this area, the death of members, which are on earth. Fornication, which again has to do with illicit sex, sexual acts. Uncleanness, which would be the filthiness of the mind, probably just a tame way of expressing that. Passion, which is uncontrolled passion. Because there's a good way of having a passion. I'll tell folks, we need a passion a lot. Something that, you know, very important to us. And ultimately, our passion should be to live the Christian life. But this is in a negative context. Evil desires. And we naturally have certain desires, but it's unnatural to have evil desires. And covetousness, and this is self-seeking behaviors, wanting what someone else has, not content with what we have, which is idolatry. Now, why does he relate it to idolatry?
Because there's some we're putting more putting ahead of God.
Exactly. More emphasis on that than God, and it becomes our God often. But notice something before we leave this. If you look at this, he's going from the greatest to the least, if you will. Okay. In other words, read this backwards. When he talks about covetousness, they are self-seeking, caring about their own fleshly desires, and they have these evil desires. I want this. I want to go do that with this person or that person. And they have this uncontrolled passion in a sexual way with all of these unclean thoughts and wanting to do this and wanting to do that, which leads to, ultimately, fornication, right? So, he knew what was going on. And that would have been a part of, especially, Hellenism, the Greek culture, right? Because even in that culture, there was homosexuality, and probably everything that's going on in today's world. Okay, so he says, we got to stop that and stop that immediately. Because, verse 6, of these things, the wrath of God is coming on the sons of disobedience. And if you continue in that, you'll be right there with them. The wrath of God. Or if they in some way are thinking about embracing that. In verse 7, in which, he's talking about in which sins, you also once walked when you lived in them. Okay. And all of that should have stopped with baptism. And I'm not saying that they are just out, you know, browsing around. But they're living in that culture where that probably and a lot permeated that culture. Much like even our culture today, right? It's everywhere. But now you must put off all these. Anger, wrath. Now there's a relationship between these two words. But the Greek language brings out this anger is more of kind of stewing on something, building up, thinking about, oh, what Mark said to me, wait till I see him next time. It just keeps building, building, building up. Whereas the wrath is more of rage. And sometimes just folks, sometimes we hear, he just lost it. I say, nah, he just gave it up. And it was a moment of rage. Okay, so there's a difference between the two. But he's saying, I don't care which one it is, you have to put that off. And malice, ill will toward others. And blasphemy, being insolent, slanders of others. Filthy language out of your mouth. Okay? Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds. You put that off. Now, it's interesting. As Paul tells people to put certain things off, he then tells them how to put things back on. Because what happens when you create a vacuum? Something's going to fill it. Exactly. So as we're dealing with folks, we don't want to create a vacuum in their life. We want certain things out of their lives, but we've got to fill that with something positive to make that true difference in their lives. Exactly. And haven't we all seen that? Yeah. Scary. In verse 10, this is what's to take place. And have put on the new man who is renewed in knowledge. There's our word again. This is true, lasting knowledge. According to the image, that icon, image of him who created him, and that is Jesus. Now, when he talks about, in verse 10 here, put on the new man, the word there is neos, like neo, neo-Gnosticism and all like that. It has to do with new in time, right? We use neo in a lot of words, neo, new, who is renewed, but this is new in quality. So we are new in time when we're baptized, and we are to become new in quality. That's the Christian life. And isn't that a qualitative life? Yeah. Renewed in knowledge, that would be the knowledge from God and who Jesus is and how I am to be like him, and I'm to be conformed to his image, to be like him. Where there is neither Greek nor Jew. Okay? That's coming back to what we're looking here, right? Circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, nor free, but Christ is all and in all. He is the answer. Okay? So beginning to look at their duties, it ultimately comes down to being Christ-like, renewed in His image. And we are to walk in His footsteps, however you define it. That's what He's saying must take place. And then He's going to go on to talk about, well, here are some areas that will reflect that Christ-likeness. Any questions at this point? Okay. And there are other passages that you can look at that go along with this, being renewed in knowledge, being conformed to His image, transformed. He says in verse 12, therefore, as the elect of God, the chosen of God, the ones that He had in mind, holy, separate apart from sin, and beloved, those that are loved by God, put on, now He begins to go into what it is to be Christ-like. Tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving one another. Now let me ask you, do you think these folks were doing that? No. But they were saying, you know, follow us, come to us, we'll help you to get to where you need to be spiritually. Yeah, right. When there was such a deficit in their own lives. The blind leading the blind, right? Different context, but really the same idea. So, tender mercies, kindness, humility. Meekness is an interesting word. This is strength under control. We usually think of meek people as kind of weak, and you know, I'm not sure if they got a backbone or not. But Jesus talks about Himself being meek and lowly, right? So Jesus had a backbone. He had a lot of strength, but it was under God's control. Okay. We want to be strong in the Lord, but our strength, too, must be controlled by God, or we can create a lot of problems. He says, bearing with one another. What does that mean, bearing with one another?
Tolerating.
Sometimes it is just that, tolerating one another, right? We're still human beings. Still got each other's nerves at times. But we're not going to allow that to jeopardize our unity, our fellowship. And forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, you also must do, because that is being Christ-like. Isn't it sad when you find brethren that have a disagreement and they really get mad at one another and go their separate ways, and they may attend the same worship service, but they are so far spiritually from one another. That's that. That still happens. And I'm kind of like, wait a minute. Just be like Jesus who forgave, and we're not doing that? Any questions as we close tonight? Okay, we're going to finish Colossians next week. And after that, again, you'll have your exam. Let's wrap it up there. I certainly appreciate so much your participation.
Thank you.